welcome to a very special edition of the Fremantle Press podcast called Love to Read Local Radio. Love to Read Local is a celebration that takes place from May to June. Well, we haven't quite got to May yet, but we've kick-started things earlier because of the dreaded COVID-19 virus. So Love to Read Local is a statewide initiative to showcase Western Australia's many, many wonderful writers and illustrators and the books they create. Now, you can probably hear from my voice, apart from the fact that I've got a slight cold, I'm not your usual host, Rebecca Higgy. My name's Susan Medaglia. I'm a short story writer and novelist. I have a second novel coming out with Fremantle Press next year, February next year, called Everyday Madness. It's my great pleasure today to introduce you to three fabulous women writers, Emily Paul, Donna Mazza, Bindi Pritchard, to talk to us about themselves, their backgrounds, their writing, what they love about writing, what they don't like about writing, and finally to recommend some books for you to read in this protracted period of self-isolation. So let me start with our first guest, Emily Paul. Hi, Emily.
Hi, Susan.
Hi. I first met Emily in the Swanbourne Book Cafe, where she was working as a bookseller. It's now sadly defunct. And Emily used to give me great recommendations for reading. And she's now a writer herself. Her debut short story collection, wonderful collection called Well Behaved Women, great title. So, Emily, tell us a bit about yourself. What got you started with writing? What you love about short stories?
Gosh, what got me started with writing? To answer that question, you have to go back a couple of decades to when I was a small child growing up in a house full of books. My mum is an avid reader, and her father, my grandpa, is also an avid reader, and he was once a literature teacher. So, you know, going to the library once a week and being allowed to go to the local Dymocks and choose one book each was a feature of my childhood. So goes all the way back there. As you mentioned, I was a bookseller for quite a lot of my adult life, and since the closure of my beloved book cafe, I have made kind of a lateral move into working in libraries as well. So at the moment I am doing my master's in an attempt to become a qualified librarian, and on top of all of that, I've just published a book and I'm working on a second one. So when I find time to, I like to read, but other than that, my time is pretty well accounted for.
Yeah, so your life's been bookended by books, as it were, from childhood and now to studying to become a librarian. So you've been
Absolutely.
Physically surrounded by books.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
So tell us a bit about your book, Emily, this wonderful collection of stories, Well-Behaved Women.
So it's a collection of 17 stories that examines a few different experiences of what it means to be a woman in Australia today. By no means is it an exhaustive list of the different types of women you come across. It's actually a very limited slice of who you might meet, but it's looking at everyday acts of small rebellion on a domestic scale. The women in the stories that I've written are not necessarily going to change the world, but they can change their own sphere of the world. And my aim with the collection was that people reading it might look at the women in their lives in a new way and realise perhaps some of the ways that they've taken people for granted, whether that be their mothers or their sisters or their wives or the people that they see when they're at the supermarket who they just, you know, make a glancing judgment of and have no idea about their lives. Mm. So that was what I was hoping to do with this set of 17 stories.
Well, that's a wonderful way to think about it. To me, one of the great gifts of your collection is, and I think it's what a really good writer does, is they take so-called ordinary people and in the ordinary characters and make them interesting, make them matter, make readers think about what they might mean. So congratulations on your collection. It's fantastic. And you're writing a new one now. Or a new collection of stories?
Not another collection of stories. I've been working on a novel that's actually set during the First World War.
A historical novel. Okay. So is this your first attempt at a novel?
No, it's my second.
Second, okay. Well, yeah, I had a go at a novel before I finally got my first one published. And as I like to tell people, it's important to keep a timeline because I realised after I'd written 20,000 words that my main female character had been pregnant for 18 months. So it was a bit of a problem, really. So anyway, good luck with that historical novel. We look forward to the outcome.
So can I throw
to our second guest now, Donna Mazza. So, hi Donna.
Stephanie.
Donna is the author of short stories, but also of two novels. So her first novel, The Albanian, won the TAG Hungerford Award back in 2006, it was, wasn't it? And now we have your new novel, Fauna. So, Donna, can you tell us a bit about your background as a writer and about your new novel with that wonderful title also, Fauna?
Much like Emily, I've been involved with books and surrounded by books since I was a child. And my grandmother used to write poetry about all the people in her life, funny poems and silly poems, and she never had them published, but you know, I knew that she was a writer even though she was an unpublished writer.
Yeah.
And I think this really planted a seed for me. She used to take us off to the secondhand bookshop in Bunbury sometimes during the school holidays and just say, buy whatever you want. And I would get this big parcel wrapped up in newspaper and full of comics and books and all sorts of crazy stuff. So, yeah, those kinds of things were like the highlights of my childhood, really. And I've been an avid reader all my life, did an English degree when I finished school and fell in love with the romantic poets and they were pretty inspiring. And I went travelling and saw lots of the places that I'd read about in books and decided that, you know, I thought I could take it on and write about these kinds of things too.
It's interesting. Both you and Emily have had, you know, families who've nurtured your love of reading, and I wonder how true that is for many writers who've had even one significant person in their life who's, you know, turned them on to reading. Sometimes it's a teacher at school and so on. But these people are, you know, really important. So tell us about Fauna, Donna, this which I know began as a short story, didn't it, which was published in Westerly magazine.
The short story was called The Exhibit and Westerly published it in 2015. Then they reissued it online on their website and it was joint winner of the Patricia Hackett Prize for that year. Lots of people really responded to it positively and kept saying to me, I want more of it. And I actually sat down because I've been working on a collection of short stories for a long time and I sat down with the intention of writing more short stories to develop it into something that was like a full manuscript length. And what happened was the voice of the narrator from Fauna just kept going and just kept going and going until it was, you know, full-length novel. So it was a story that felt like it wanted me to tell it, and it was a fairly demanding kind of story. So I just kept going.
It's interesting that wasn't your intention, was it, to write a novel originally, but that it grew. So tell us a little bit about it. I mean, it's a very confronting book in many ways, and a very unusual book. Just give us a little kind of rundown.
So it's set 17 years into the future, Western Australia, and it's the story of a family, particularly from the mother's point of view. Her name's Stacey, and their family are struggling financially, living in a fairly difficult suburban life in southern suburbs of Perth, and they're given the opportunity through an old family connection to sign up for an experimental program with genetic modification, and so their baby is genetically altered before it's implanted, and she's modified with pain DNA. So Stacey carries the child full term, and she's born, and they bring the child Asta up amongst their family. They've got two other children. And so the story moves down south to Australind in the southwest, and she brings the child up, and it's very connected to the landscape and that kind of the coastal landscape around the southwest area. So it kind of talks about issues like motherhood and attachment, parenting children of all ages and all kinds. Some people have said to me that it touched them because they've had a child with a disability, and it's talked to them about having a child is different. And it also talks about the potential moral dilemmas of future editing of our human DNA and what that means for us as people and families. So even though it has that kind of speculative element, it's very much a human story and about family and motherhood.
Yeah, and I guess it does. Certainly when I was reading it, it got me thinking about this and reminded me that speculative fiction is really kind of extrapolated or exaggerated version of what's happening in our world right now, and the kinds of thing, and really about the ethics of how we treat people who are different, our relationship to the environment, all those things. So it's set in the future, but it's also our world. Interesting that you've had that range of responses to different ways of reading it as well.
Yeah, it's been really interesting having people's responses.
And yes, and it's sometimes not what you're expecting, which is also good, I think. Yeah,
it is.
Do you take that view once your book's out into the world? It's no longer yours in a sense, that you might think it means certain things, but readers might read it differently. Do you have a kind of proprietorial attitude to your work, or are you happy to have to? Well, I know some writers are like that. They think, you know, this is what my book means and nobody can tell me anything different.
I think that once you let it go, it's completely out of your control, really.
Yeah.
Once you set it free in the world, then people are able to think what they want of it.
That's good. I think there's, and I won't get into the gender politics, but I know people who, writers who feel very proprietorial about their work are often men. So, sorry, you can cut that one out if you like. Now, unfortunately, I couldn't get to either Emily's or Donna's launches. I had previous commitments, but I was able to get to the launch of our third guest, if I can now introduce Bindi Pritchard. Hi, Bindi.
Hi, everyone.
And Bindi is the author of a collection of stories, so like Emily's, and hers is called Fabulous Lives. So it's a fabulous collection. So, Bindi, can you tell us too a bit about yourself, your background, and about your collection?
Yeah, sure. So, Emily and Donna, I always loved reading, always loved writing as a child. So when I finished school, I enrolled into a BA in literature. But I sort of, after finishing that degree and going back and forward, I dropped out, I went back. It took a while and I sort of got lost along the way a bit. So I'm very late to the writing gig. I spent years doing all sorts of jobs that I probably just fell into or maybe didn't really have a passion for. So I've worked as a cleaner, a customs officer, a pizza deliverer. I've worked at a bowling alley. I've worked in the prison. I've worked in a retirement village. So I've had all these sorts of jobs, which I, you know, some of them were satisfying in some level, and I met some great people, but it wasn't my true calling. And so the turning point for me was when I turned 43. I got really, really sick. And I discovered I had a congenital heart defect, and that was almost the catalyst to kind of make me stop and revisit my life and see that I hadn't actually lived the life I thought I would live and what I wanted to do. So that's when I actually decided to write full time. So I started to write lots of short stories. I attempted a novel, which didn't really work out, but it became a couple of short stories I got from that. And I just continued to write, enjoyed that process. And then the turning point, the second turning point really was getting shortlisted and runner-up in the Margaret River Short Story Competition. And I met Caroline Wood through that, and she gave me this incredible opportunity to get this book published.
I know she had to keep. I know she had to keep hounding you for the book, Mindy. You were quite reluctant. Where are these stories? She kept.
So I met her at Westerly one night. A friend of mine was getting her poem in Westerly. So I went to the launch and I saw Caroline there, and she asked if I had a collection, and I kind of said, "Yeah, I guess so," but then forgot about it and thought it wasn't. I thought it was a rhetorical question, and I didn't have to follow up on it. But anyway, yeah, she got back in touch with me, and then I quickly got all the stories together and sent it off. And at that point, I didn't even have a proper title to it. The title that I've got now was actually a different story in the collection. I changed that title. So the original title of that story was People Who Look Worse After a Haircut. So we thought maybe that title doesn't work so well. So it became Fabulous Lives. And I think that that title summed up the collection. It sort of played on the idea of something being fabelhaft, like the German fable-like, being little lies, because the stories are about people that are probably not living authentic lives. They're quite unhappy. They're suffering from loss of some kind, whether it's loss of youth, loss of health, loss of loved ones. So, little fables, and some of them have a bit of magical realism in it as well. So, that's how the collection started. And the stories are really based a lot in Perth. They also reflect my life and all those crazy jobs. So there's a bowling alley, there's places I've been, like in Hawaii. There's also seen in Germany when I did an exchange over there when I was very young. So, yeah, all elements of my life have kind of come full circle in this collection.
Yeah, and it's been a very, very rich life. And if you'll pardon the pun, I think that's discovering that you had a critical heart condition. It's a very heartwarming story that gave you the impetus to write. I think that's a really lovely story in a sense. That time is precious. So look, we have with the three of you. Donna, who's a published short story writer and novelist, and Emily and Bindi, you have collections of short stories, but you're either writing a novel or trying to write a novel. So maybe start with you, Donna. Do you have a preference for short stories, writing short stories and novels, or do you see them as very different? How do you feel about those two forms of writing?
Sometimes short stories seem to take as long as a novel. And I had one published last year in Westerly called The True Tale, and that story took me longer to write than it took me to write Fauna.
Really?
Because
how long, roughly?
About 4 years.
To write one short story?
Yeah.
That's either really impressive or totally ridiculous. I can't put it
that way. I was kind of erred on totally ridiculous myself. But between over that period of time, the story evolved, and it had so many, like 9 different redrafts of the same story. And I was refining it and refining it and refining it, and it eventually got to the point where it was right. And there's such a kind of fine-tuned creation, I think, the short story. You know, they're so, sometimes I've had them come out as a first draft and I think that's just about there. I don't really need to do much to it. And then other times the story is really demanding of you in ways that, you know, I've had them kind of really make me quite physically respond to them and quite, you know, sick from them. Whereas my novel, this novel, came to me a lot more easily.
Yeah, it's interesting,
even though
isn't it?
A lot more complex.
There is this prevailing opinion, or it's an opinion that some people have, that short stories are easy to write simply because they're short. You know, it doesn't take you much time at all. But it's a very exacting form of writing, isn't it? Every word has to be the right one.
It is. I feel like, you know, the time required to write a novel is the obstacle for me, because I work full-time as an academic and I have, you know, children at home and things, And so having that dedicated, intense time to work on a novel is a lot more challenging. And so just by way of practicality, having time to work on a short story is a lot easier because that kind of compressed form suits the kind of compressed time that I have available most of the time.
Yeah, because it is a long time since your first novel, and I don't mean that as a criticism. It's not, you know, what have you been doing with your life since then? It's you've got a full-time job as an academic, you have children. I'm amazed you've been able to write anything creative at all, to be honest. That's remarkable. No, really, that's having a full-time job and the nature that you have, it's very demanding intellectually and emotionally. So we're very pleased to have this new book in the world.
Fauna is only here because I had 6 months academic study leave.
Right,
So they gave me a sabbatical from work. And without that, I would not have had the time to write something like that of that intensity.
Yeah.
So, you know, when the government funds writers with grants and that kind of thing, it enables these things to happen. And from my point of view, without that support from organisations and funding bodies, then writers' lives are very difficult.
Yeah, absolutely. So still on the subject, or getting back to the subject of short stories, Emily and Bindi, do you find what attracts you to the form of the short story? Is it difficult? Have you found it difficult? We don't want to put people off here, but... So, Bindi, what do you think?
I prefer it as a form. I've tried to write a novel, as I said before, and it was just too hard. It's this unwieldy beast that you have to stay focused and you've got to have so many threads going through. But the short story, you're in and out in an instant. And, yes, they can take a long time to craft, and certainly I don't get a story in an instant, but I get the first draft in an instant. So, and then you can sort of work at it, and it's like an artifact you can shape, and you can aim for perfection. So I do love that. And you can also get feedback straight away on a short story. So when you go to writing groups, you can actually workshop a short story really easily, where it's hard when you've got chapters in a book because it's very hard for someone to give feedback when they don't know the whole story or how it's been shaped or the motifs that are going to go through it. So you can kill a novel too easily, I think, by sharing that too soon. But the short story, I just feel you can send it off into magazines or competitions, and then you get a sense of whether, if it doesn't, you know, make a long listing, you know, well, it's obviously not there yet. You work on it again. So you
it could mean that the judge doesn't know what a good story is. I'm not being entirely facetious. I think
That's
it's
true.
It's sometimes a matter of luck, you know, that has a certain taste or whatever.
But I do remember, I think it's funny, last year we both were at the Short Story Festival in Melbourne, and you were interviewing Deborah Adelaide, and she said this quite shocking statement in the middle of her cast, but she said that there are so many perfect short stories and she can only name one perfect novel. And there was this little gasp in the audience because normally short stories are sort of way down the list and novels are on the pedestal. But she mentioned the best, and you asked her what is the perfect perfect novel, and she said The Prime of Miss Jean Brodie. Mm. So I raced home and I read it. And it's great, but I wouldn't have called it perfect. So then I started to think, what novels do I find I could actually say are perfect? Because I've got a whole list of short stories that I could put on that list. So I don't know if anyone else has thoughts about that.
Yeah. One of my favourite definitions of a novel is by a poet, an American poet called Randall Jarrell, a wonderful poet who said, a novel is a work of prose fiction of some length that has something wrong with it. I really like that. Emily, just going back to you, what attracted you to short story writing? What do you love about it? What do you find hard about it, for that matter?
Well, it's interesting. While I was listening to Bindi answering the question, I've got this shelf on my bookcase at the very top where I keep all of my very favourite books. And I'm just looking at it right now, and there's only one short story collection up there, but there's about 10 novels. Mm. And that short story collection is Ryan O'Neill's The Weight of Human Heart.
Oh, that's a fabulous collection.
It absolutely showcases what a short story can do and the breadth of what short stories can do, because there are no two stories that are alike in that collection, and yet they're all incredibly powerful. And Susan, your collections as well are, you know, shining examples of just how powerful short stories can be. The way that you can hop in and out of heads of different characters from different backgrounds, different genders, different age groups, it's just astonishing. And I think the terrifying thing for me as a short story writer is the knowledge that most of the people who read short stories are either other writers or they have some other interest in literature, like they're literature students or something like that. So they're going to be reading your work with a fine-tooth comb. I think people who read a lot of novels predominantly tend to be a bit more forgiving once they get caught up in the story. They're not judging your every word choice after a while, whereas in a short story, you've only got about 3,000 words, and if you reuse the same unusual word in a paragraph, they're going to catch you. So for that reason, I think it's much, much harder to write a short story than it is to write a novel, although that being said, I've found it much, much harder to get a novel published than I have to get short stories published.
I take your point absolutely, but readers being far less forgiving, I think, of lapses in a short story. You notice mistakes more easily, don't you? And you lose faith in the writer much more quickly, whereas in a novel, the story keeps you going often, doesn't it?
It just does. Plot.
Yeah. Well, look, at this point, I'd like to ask you about your current reading, and in particular, what have you read recently from West Australian writers and Australian writers that's really bowled you over, that you've loved? So, Donna, what about you?
I'm currently reading this great book called The Octopus and I. The Octopus and I.
The Octopus and I, yeah.
Yeah, and it's a story about a woman who's just had a double mastectomy, and it's her relationship with her body. But it's reflected really beautifully through this octopus and the octopus in the landscape around Tasmania, around Eagle Hook Neck, where it's set, which is just near Hobart. Mm. And it's just such a beautifully poetic novel on a really big scale. So it doesn't, you know, it doesn't kind of hit you over the head with it, but it's got this kind of overarching metaphor which works really beautifully through the whole novel. And I've been really impressed with that big metaphor and how it's been able to operate through the whole work.
And it sounds like it's like your writing, it's deeply embodied.
It is. It's very kind of it's very fleshy, and it doesn't shrink from the kind of gruesome details of demonization stuff. You know, scars and that kind of thing. People really suffer and struggle with, and I think.
Is she a Tasmanian writer?
She's a Tasmanian writer.
Okay. So anything else you've been reading or recently read that you've loved?
I've just been enjoying the stories in Poems About the House, which is a little collection by Carol Milner. She's a West Australian poet from Perth, and it's published by Mulla Mulla Press. And I've just been enjoying dipping in and out of this little collection of small poems. They're very domestic, and in our current lockdown, it's really nice to enjoy things that appreciate the smaller things in life or the more discreet and subtle things in life, because that's the kind of space we're in, where we are kind of more internal and closed off from the rest of the world in our isolation. So Poems About the House really reflects that quite nicely. I've been liking that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it's got a great cover too, that collection. Really lovely. I know one shouldn't judge a book by its cover, but there you go. It's a great cover and a great collection of poems. So thanks for that, Donna. Emily, what about you? What have you been reading lately that you've enjoyed? Australian writers.
Yeah, I'm actually about 100 pages into Fauna, so it's been really interesting listening to Donna speak about it this afternoon. I just recently read The Salt Madonna by Catherine Noski as well, the editor of Westerly's first book, and it is absolutely phenomenal. It has echoes of
Thea Astley and Tim Winton, and I will be very, very shocked and upset if it's not on the Miles Franklin long list when that comes out later this year.
There you go. You heard it. Yeah, it is a great book. It's fantastic. Yeah. Anything else?
Oh, gosh, I've read so much recently, but not a lot of it's Australian, unfortunately, or West Australian, so I think I'll leave that for now.
Well, just nominate one. One doesn't have to be West Australian or Australian, just something you think of.
Well, something that had a bit of an Australian connection. I just read Ariel Lawn's new book, Codename Helene, which is about the life of Nancy Wake during the 1940s. Yeah. And that was very, very entertaining. Her Nancy is, she's the kind of woman I'd love to go out for a drink with. She puts her Elizabeth Arden Victory Red on, and when the boys are saying, what's that for? She says, I'm putting on my armour, my war paint. She was very irreverent and, had a bit of a foul mouth on her, but it was just such a good, fun little romp through history. And then reading the historical note at the end, the author's clearly done her homework about getting facts right as much as she possibly could.
Yeah. So this might be useful for your own novel, your own historical novel.
It's certainly the level of writing that I aspire to, but I don't know if I'm there yet.
My mantra as a writer is always never compare, because, you know, you read something that's so good, you think, why do I bother writing myself? But you can't do that. it kills your writing, I think. So, yeah, never compare. And Mindy, what about you? What have you read recently?
I read quite a few because of the lockdown. That's been the one good thing about lockdown. I love Fauna. I just read that last week. It's a sort of book that just stays with you for such a long time. I honestly just couldn't stop thinking about what I would have done. I understood what Stacey went through. I loved the whole meditation on motherhood and the breastfeeding and how the baby was just devouring her. And it really takes you back to, those early days when you do breastfeed and the obsessional love you have for your child and how nothing else matters but to the detriment of your own mental health and how the DNA of the baby sort of is transferred into the mother and she loses the sense of who she is. I just thought it was beautiful. I'm so glad it was set in WA. I thought the risk could have been with this kind of book because it's such a big book and it should do really well, but the risk could have been there could have been more of an international setting. I'm so glad it wasn't. I'm so glad it's set in the southwest and in Perth and the contrast with the landscape. That was truly wonderful. So, and a great book for book clubs. I can't recommend that enough. The other couple of books I've read, True West by David Wish Wilson, and this is a historical crime thriller, and I wouldn't normally read this genre, but I met David at the Perth Writers Festival and I heard him speak about this book and I was just truly transfixed by the subject matter. And it's set in 1980s Perth, so something that I'm familiar with, and it's sort of loosely based on the Jack Van Tongeren Australian Nationalist Movement time where there was the anti-Asian sentiment. And I do remember, going to bus stops and seeing Asians out on graffiti on the bus stops, and then there were firebombings in both the streets at the Asian restaurants. So there were some terrible things that happened then, but things that are happening now, there's such a parallel between the rise of these extreme right groups and then, neo-Nazi sort of groups. So I think it's an important book to read. It is an absolutely riveting sort of roller coaster. I had twists and turns in it that I didn't expect. And I also love the fact it's got another layer to it of about toxic masculinity and the dangers of generational trauma with men and how they, if they're not coping, if they're not dealing with their mental illness and their violence, that each generation suffers because of that. And so the lead character, Lee, is just stuck in this terrible cycle of violence because of what his father, his grandfather and his great-grandfather have been through. And so you really are wanting and willing this character to escape and to break free. So, and I loved it. It had Beaufort Street, it had Nollumara, the western suburbs. It was really great to have another book about Perth. And then the other one, which is another Fremantle Press book, I didn't plan it this way, but it's one that I read because I really wanted to read it. John Dowse's Return Ticket. I'd read the first two, and this is the third book of the Jack Muir trilogy. And it is just fantastic. It really is the coming home for Jack and the like the gentle, I think the gentle reconciliation of all his pain and his anger into this beautiful sense of return and forgiveness and a sense of contentment that he finds. But it's really set in two places. It's set in South Africa during the apartheid years in the 70s and also in Israel on a kibbutz. And I really loved the bit about the kibbutz. So it really talked in great detail about kibbutz life, about all the manual labour they had to do, or the way the group was organised. You know, this socialist right. experiment of trying to, you know, build Israel up as a nation. And of course, it's not perfect, as is Israel. And so he has all these incredibly philosophical musings and discussions about racism, about you know, humanity, and about friendship. So it's just a joy to be inside Jack Muir's head again.
Thank you. That sounds great. And all those recommendations sound wonderful. And I'd like to recommend the works by all three of you. So I've read them all. I've loved them all. They're very different, but they offer different kinds of challenges and pleasures, but they're all beautifully written and all, you know, consistently interesting. And I think the one thing that creative writing must be is interesting. If it's dull and boring, that's a killer. So Donna Mazza's new novel, Fauna, which is by Allen and Unwin, and two Margaret River Press publications, Emily Corr's collection of short stories, Well-Behaved Women, and Bindi Pritchard's collection of short stories, Fabulous Lives. I can recommend them all. Okay, just one last question for all of you. Is there one work of Western Australian literature which has been really important for you, perhaps a book that you go back to? Can you all nominate one if you have one? So, Donna, what about you?
Oh, it's a hard question.
I know. Only one. Only
and
one.
On the hop. The first thing that comes to mind for me is Breath by Tim Winton. I think that's his best work. I think I've read it 5 times. And it's just got so much in it, so many layers, and the landscape in it is just spectacular, and I think it's his masterpiece, actually.
Mm. Okay, thank you. Bindi, what about you?
I loved, Merry-Go-Round in the Sea, because I read it as a teenager, and it was the first book that I realised that, you know, you saw the Geraldton Close, Western Australia, Perth on an international stage. You know, this was a very important book that I think a very important writer, and a lot of schools don't study this anymore, which is a real shame.
Yeah, that's one of my favourite Western Australian novels too. And Emily, what about you?
Well, I spent a year of my life writing a thesis on Craig Silvey's novel Jasper Jones, so it's got to be that one. I've read it way too many times. I think my copy of it's falling apart and I'm going to have to get another one. And it's, you know, one of the only books that without fail can keep me up reading way past bedtime. Everything else, sleep is way too important, but that book I can stay up till 2-3 in the morning if I have to. It just, you know, it's such a slim book, but it speaks to all of the Australian literature that's come before it. I can see interplay between what happens in Jasper Jones and Picnic at Hanging Rock, and you know, there's echoes of Robert Drew and Tim Winton and all these other books that I love, all in this one neat package. It's just absolutely my favourite book of all time.
That's great, and I'm very impressed by the fact that you still like it after you spent a year writing it.
Yeah, I'm relieved.
Okay, look, thanks for all that. So Merry-Go-Round of the Sea, Jasper Jones and Breath, three wonderful West Australian novels. So it's been great to catch up with you three wonderful writers and with the listeners out there. And we hope you found some inspiring local reads to get you through the next few months of isolation. So Donna, Emily, Bindi, thank you so much for your time today. And thank you, listeners, for being a part of Love to Read Local Radio. So Love to Read Local Radio is brought to you by Fremantle Press with support from the Copyright Agency's Cultural Fund. And Love to Read Local is a week-long celebration of Western Australia's many outstanding writers and illustrators and their work. It's brought to you by Writing WA, You can check the show notes for more details about Writing WA, as well as for information on getting hold of any of the books we've mentioned today. And if you've enjoyed this episode, and I certainly hope you have, be sure to subscribe to the Fremantle Press podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, SoundCloud, or anywhere you get your favourite podcast from. Thanks, everybody.